Hey everyone, it's time for another bonus episode. St. Louis is one of the most segregated cities in America, which is why producers of this show have always seen it as a stage for larger stories about race and class in the U.S.
But we wanted to give you a little more context on how it got to be this way.
The organization of urban space and the organization of property fits the northern pattern of stark segregation.
Colin Gordon is a historian at the University of Iowa, and he spent years studying the St. Louis region's economic and racial divides.
But it's race relations, it's assumptions about black and white, and really are, in many respects, southern.
Colin just released a new book that outlines how this attitude toward race and class informs all the governmental divides in St. Louis.
It's called Citizen Brown: Race, Democracy, and Inequality in the St. Louis Suburbs. And he says that even though all American cities share a common story about segregation, St. Louis is a bit of an outlier.
These lines were really manufactured quite intentionally over a long period of time, starting with the effort by the city to pass a racial zoning ordinance in 1916, and then followed in pretty short order by the efforts of realtors to use both informal practices and race-restrictive deed covenants to really sort the population in St. Louis north to south.
And the resulting municipal divides have consequences for housing, policing, schooling, and economic opportunity.
They're like gerrymandered electoral districts. They're drawn in such a way to pointedly exclude and include.
On this bonus episode, Colin Gordon will explain how St. Louis was divided by design, the impact of municipal divides on public goods and services, and what can be done about the policies and practices that perpetuate segregation today.
From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here, a show for people somewhere on the woke spectrum. St. Louis is one of America's most segregated cities. Simply put, because it had a head start.
So there's a pretty stable, both working class and middle class African-American population in St. Louis in the era of World War I. And that's much earlier than in cities like Chicago, Detroit, Milwaukee, Minneapolis, where almost all their African-American population comes with the Great Migration after the war.
As soon as African-Americans put down roots in St. Louis, white people began inventing and implementing methods of segregation.
And homeowners association of realtors go door to door and get homeowners to sign up to agree with their neighbors that none of them will ever sell to African Americans.
They began creating private streets and using race-restrictive deed covenants. By the time that a new wave of African Americans came to St. Louis during the Great Migration, they were left with two major options for where they could live in the city.
They're confined very much in the North St. Louis area around what used to be called the Ville, and as well, in at least in the early years, in the Mill Creek Valley.
And as the population of African Americans grew in the city, white working class people started moving out.
Between the 1920s and 1940s, white people moved west and began establishing small towns in St. Louis County.
That pattern of white flight was, in large part sort of bankrolled by deep subsidies given to white homeowners by the Veterans Administration or by the Federal Housing Administration, and by the fact that it was much easier to get a favorable mortgage rate on a new suburban home than it was to refinance one in the city.
And they carried over the same mechanisms of segregation they used in the city.
About 1910, 1915, and the end of the 1940s, virtually all of those subdivisions built in St. Louis County included race-restrictive deed covenants.
Meanwhile, all black neighborhoods in the city started to get overcrowded.
Then, the U.S. Supreme Court made two major judicial decisions about housing segregation. Here's the first.
In 1947, in a case that came out of St. Louis, they outlawed the enforcement of race-restrictive deed covenants.
As we've mentioned before, it used to be pretty easy to make an entirely new town in Missouri. And in the years following the decision, dozens and dozens were created in St. Louis County, creating a jigsaw puzzle of local government. And we're still dealing with the aftermath today.
Now there are more than 80 municipalities and dozens of courts and small police departments. This takes us to the second major decision by the nation's highest court.
In 1968, in another case that came out of St. Louis, in the sort of Paddock Woods, Spanish Lake area, they outlawed discrimination in private real estate transactions.
These decisions allow Black people to move out of the city into those small towns, a generation after white flight from the city.
Property values are relatively low, and there are at least some opportunity for rental and multifamily accommodation.
Some moved into unincorporated areas that often lack basic infrastructure, while others settled in the towns that white people originally created to keep Black people out. And this move was motivated by the hopes of better schools and better living conditions for their children.
But white people became anxious about property values and the prospect of living next to Black people.
There is an effort on the part of white elected officials, white school boards, white homeowners, neighborhood associations, to maintain those older lines of segregation. And much of the work of that falls to the police.
White people who could afford to do so began moving further and further west.
At the same time, what's happening is those municipalities are beginning to fall behind in terms of their ability to raise money and meet their basic costs. They're old municipalities, so their infrastructure is aging and the costs are very high.
As the sales tax base moved west, property taxes started falling.
And the municipalities started to get desperate.
Those struggling inner suburbs start giving away their tax base to potential investors and big box retail in the hope of either hanging on to or attracting new investment.
They were struggling to keep the lights on at City Hall. So they turned to the police and municipal courts to raise revenues through fees and fines.
And they were also actively, raising the revenues to pay their own salaries by cracking down on, Black kids jaywalking and motorists with broken taillights and homeowners with unkempt lawns.
Collins says this was the context for the deadly encounter between Michael Brown Jr. and the Ferguson police officer that occurred on August 9th, 2014.
Even though many of the laws and methods that enforce segregation have been struck down, practices that maintain segregation are still alive today.
Every time you draw a boundary, split a school district, establish new catchment zones for an elementary school or incorporate a new municipality, you're engaged in that sort of gerrymandering of race and class. It's an ongoing project.
And this is because the distribution of public goods and services is so closely tied to race and class.
Think of the way in which people buy a home because it buys them into a good school district.
The same goes for water, sewage, utilities.
And they're based on your income, when they really should be, fundamentally public goods.
With the daily and deadly consequences of segregation, you might be wondering, can we just redraw the map and start over?
Earlier this year, a group called Better Together asked that same question. Their effort was the subject of our episode, At the Table and Dismissed. Collins says creating a new megacity isn't a bad idea.
I think some form of more robust regional government is a substantial part of the answer.
But Better Together failed to address education, which raised a lot of concerns.
People on both sides of the city-county line are very leery as to whether they're going to be a winner or whether they're going to be a loser in this scenario. What does it mean to erase the boundaries of my school district or my municipality?
And you faithful listeners know that there is another process underway that could redraw the map of St. Louis.
It's called the Board of Freeholders, and they can recommend huge changes or no changes. Local voters would have the final say. And Colin says that if we're going to move toward racial equity, regional cooperation is the place to start.
We, for example, have no problem with the fact that sanitary sewers are done on a regional basis, because it just doesn't make any sense to have the sewer pipe stop and start at each municipality and have, 104 treatment plants. We also recognize that we have to do transportation planning on a regional basis for the same reason. It doesn't make sense to have, you know, 84 light rail systems.
And he says you can require municipalities to provide services that can at least start to mitigate the effects of systematic inequities.
Take residential segregation, for example. Colin says you could require municipalities, especially those that are mostly white and wealthy, to provide a certain amount of affordable housing.
I think local governments have the power to do a lot of damage, particularly in their control over things like schooling and policing. But they don't have the capacity, they don't have the fiscal capacity to do a lot of good. A poor municipality in North County can't turn around the property values. It can't make huge public investments in school. So I think the more you raise the standards and the more you make higher levels of government be responsible for evening out those disparities, the better off you are.
All of this brings us back to Michael Brown Jr., the namesake for Colin Gordon's book, Citizen Brown.
Michael Brown was a student of the Normandy School District, which a couple of years before his death actually lost its accreditation in the state of Missouri as a sort of notoriously underperforming district, again, because its property tax base was so poor, and among other reasons. Now, at that time, as you know, at the moment when Michael Brown was shot in 2014, 2% of white school children in St. Louis County attended unaccredited public schools. 44% of black school-age children attended unaccredited county schools. And they're unaccredited for a reason. They're not good schools. They're not well-resourced. They're not well-run. And they have very high demands placed on them.
Colin Gordon laid out in clear terms how St. Louis became one of America's most segregated cities by design, and how municipal divides impact what it means to be a citizen, with daily and deadly consequences for African Americans.
But several years ago, a group of mostly black mayors started to bridge those municipal divides from the ground up. On our next episode, we tell you the story of a group of mostly black mayors in North St. Louis County who began working together, unified by their desire to improve the Normandy School District, and what happened when they began consolidating services and governments. This show is produced by me, Jalian.
And me, Ashley Renee. Lauren Brown is our associate producer. Much of the research for this episode was based on the book Citizen Brown, written by Colin Gordon. We highly recommend it as a resource for learning more.
Our show is overseen by Tim Lloyd, senior producer of On Demand and Content Partnerships, and Robert Peterson, the director of radio programming and operations. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.